Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and we're back for part two of our discussion about the offense from that 41-17 win. We should have been a lot more positive about that in the first show, but Jordan May is a guy who makes it easy to be negative. Jordan Coe. Jordan, how you doing?
Good, Ken. I'm still super excited about this team. It's Super Bowl or bust. It's all there. There have been some weird things that have happened so far this year. But I still haven't gotten the anger out of my system from week one. So I think that's really what we're experiencing here.
A lot of good stuff in that first episode. Some great thoughts from Jordan about a variety of things. He thinks there might be an injury with Lamar they're not talking about. There's an entire Keaton Mitchell conspiracy going on. The snap counts were lost decisively. Neither of us is happy about that. Lamar, I think we both agree, did not have a great day throwing the ball. He was slightly above expectation. Left some throws on the field that might have been interception worthy, but he was a lot of the offense here, and the Browns certainly lined up and are an extremely talented defensive front, which is going to be good. But we talked a lot about that during the first episode. Any other things that were important points you thought from the first episode that people should go back and listen to?
I think, you know, just that kind of where they are, Ravens are with injuries, how they're using different players and different packages and trying to keep an eye on that as they're moving forward. Is this like a symptom of the early season? Are they stuck in their kind of mode of how they want to call plays, or is this really just trying to keep everything close to the vest, which it really does feel like it is.
Right. Gotcha. Well, there's a lot of things you might need a mob for. If you need a flash mob, I don't think Jordan is your guy. If you need a mob to storm the castle and you need pitchforks and torches involved, go get Jordan. Ring his doorbell first because he has that equipment all ready to go, and he gets angry very easily. And a lot of that comes out in the first episode in terms of some very strong thoughts about coaches in particular. And obviously you would move a lot more quicker on those kind of fronts than I would. All right, well, let's move it on a little bit and talk about the offensive line. Let me make sure I have my charts here while I look for this here.
Yeah, I mean, Ken, I think the big question is, you know, what was your overall take as we start on this of the offensive line? Because my take is not good. Pitchfork.
Yeah. it was a very tough day for the left side of the offensive line. From center to left was quite bad. Falele played well, and we'll get to him in a little bit later. Rosengarten had a nice bounce back game as well. But the basic problem with the offensive line is no one has been consistent. Everybody's had like one severe up and one severe down game, except for Voorhees, who had two severe down games. So I've given away all the scoring with that comment, but we'll go through and paint some of the background series scenery with this, I think.
Yeah, well, I mean, it starts with Ronnie Stanley. And at the end of the day, that's what the Ravens paid him for, you know, and brought him back for. What do you see from him this week?
Yeah, so everybody had 50 plays because they had 53 snaps. The last three are not scored snaps for offensive line purposes because they're snaps when they're kneeling, so they're not competitive. 50 snaps, 38 blocks, missed four blocks, but had eight contributions to negative plays. That is a lot. He had zero the first week, by the way, when he scored an A-. But one penetration allowed. He allowed two pressures. That's one plus two times a half. A third of a quarterback hit, two sacks, and that's one plus two thirds plus one third. So he had partial responsibility at least for all three of the sacks. So that wasn't good. It worked out to only 19 points out of 50. So that's 0.38. I have a subjective adjustment I add to that, which is up to a maximum of 10 points. I give him the entire thing for facing Myles Garrett, since that is the single toughest assignment you could probably have in the NFL as a left tackle. Still an F, and an F by 12 points. He would have to, you know, bump his grade to get up to the D-minus level. I don't think it's anything to be terribly worried about because he had a 50 adjusted score versus Myles Garrett last year in his first meeting too. So I don't think it means his season is terrible. He's not the same player he was. Unfortunately, it probably means he's exactly the same player he was in terms of handling some of the really best pass rushers in the league. So, had a really good week in week one. This week was not as good. Did make 5 level 2 blocks. Mobility still looks pretty good for him. He's still a very smart lineman in terms of knowing how to deal with two guys on the backside of a play. But I thought, a fall back to earth game for Ronnie. And I wouldn't say it's a completely fall off the table game, although it's close to it. The F range, because it goes all the way from 0 to 59 at tackle, actually goes from -6 to 59 potentially at tackle, but it has a wide range of potential outcomes. And James Hurst can play there and really score in the teens or even below that. Or you can have Ronnie Stanley toss up a 48 against Myles Garrett on an adjusted basis, which is bad, but it doesn't mean that Ronnie Stanley can't play well the rest of the year.
And you mentioned it earlier, he looked decent against Bosa in week one. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think that all is lost here. It does make me a little worried about potentially this Detroit game and Hutchinson. Makes me a bit worried about the Green Bay game. That's a long ways down the road. But Michael Parsons, I think the one player that could say is a bigger or equal potential threat versus Myles Garrett might be Michael Parsons. There are some good edge rushers. We obviously have the Pittsburgh edge rushers like coming up. So we're going to need a better performance here from Stanley, but hopefully this is what it is. I mean, that's the other part of this. Like the Ravens didn't pay him like an elite left tackle either. Right. They didn't pay him to be a
bargain price.
Yeah. It's not going to be a blindside always win expectations of, even when you're playing a Myles Garrett to be a C or better. So, I don't worry about this one too much, but at the end of the day, we need Stanley healthy all year long. We don't need the backup tackles to be playing at any point. And so he got his butt beat, but he stayed healthy. So, that's about the best you can ask for.
Yeah, it is. It's a very long drop off to Joe Noteboom, folks. I mean, I can just tell you that Joe Noteboom didn't look good in the preseason. He hasn't really looked good at any point during his career in terms of being a guy who ever really threatened to have a long-term starting role. He's done it when other players have been out, but in terms of being a starter for, somebody they'd expect to be a starter for more than even half to two-thirds of a season, that's never really occurred during a 8 or 9 year career for him.
Yeah. So, but Ronnie Stanley wasn't the only problem on the left side of the line. And you mentioned this, and I mean, this is an interesting one, and I'll let you talk about like his score in particular, but I think there's a broader question here. What is the parachute pool moment here as it relates to Voorhees? And, is that person on the current roster, or is this something that the Ravens need to go outside the roster?
It's interesting that Daniel Faalele gets all the vitriol. And part of it is just it's easy to find oafish snaps from Faalele, but the overall result's much better that he's put on the field. Voorhees has played less. He's been less impressive at his best, and he's been at his best less often than Faalele has. So it's been a there's multiple things going on. Now, Voorhees earned the confidence of the coaches in the preseason. Played 31 wonderful snaps during the preseason. If you believe PFF's grading, was outstanding in the 90s or so in 31 snaps. That's half a game, folks, half a football game. I've done this long enough that I can tell you at the very minimum, there is tremendous week-to-week variation in offensive line performance. It's kind of like starting pitchers have tremendous variation. They'll occasionally throw a complete clunker in there and they get knocked out the first inning, give up 5 runs. That's kind of what it's like to play left tackle in the NFL. And you got to put it behind you and suit up for the next week. And that's true at other positions as well, too. Very tough matchup for Voorhees. In particular, Malik Collins was far too much for him. He also had trouble with the Huntington, I think is the guy's name, the number 98. Anyway, he had trouble with Shelby as well. He and Ian Linderbaum both. So it was a tough game for him. He missed 11 blocks. 6 of those were losses at the line of scrimmage. Normally, if you have a lot of blocks and it's because you're moving to level 2 and not able to find a block, it's not good. And that was kind of the Daniel Faalele way last year. But it's also not the worst place to miss a block or to not find a block in level 2. You you miss or whiff or can't handle the guy directly across from you, that's a lot worse. Anyway, six of those for Voorhees in this game. He also allowed three pressures, and that's two plus two times a half. So he's really partied to four different pressure events. 29 points overall, 0.58. Now at guard, the passing score is 0.67. Even with an adjustment. Oh, and he also had one other play where he allowed what was effectively a pressure, and Lamar ran him out of it for a 9-yard gain. That kind of gets totaled against him as half a pressure in his subjective adjustment. Again, more detail, a lot in the weeds here in terms of how the scoring works, but his adjusted score is 0.61, was still 6 points short of a passing grade at left guard. Two level two blocks, one out of one on pulls. He did have two highlights. It's not like, you know, it wasn't a complete fall off the table game, but I don't understand the relative level of concern for Falele versus Voorhees. I do not get it.
Well, is there, I'm curious if there's anything, well, I want to go back to my prior question about where, when you might pull the parachute on this, but yeah. I want to ask another question first here, which is that, was there complexity from what you were seeing from the offensive line, like the play calls or what they were asking them to do, or were these guys just, it didn't matter what the call was, even if it was the best possible call with help or whatever for Stanley and Voorhees, they were just getting their butts beat up and down the field?
Okay. So the complexity I'm normally worried about as an offensive line scorer is what the defense is throwing at them, not what the offense is asking to do. They've literally gone through the dance steps of those plays offensively in great detail. And so they know where they're supposed to be, how they're supposed to make a reach block. If the guy next to them is vacating, you know, all the things that go with playing offensive line. So I'm less concerned with that. It's when the defense throws a wrinkle at them. There's a blitzer, or there's a stunt, or there's a simulated pressure. They got to know how they're going to react to that and adjust all across the line as a unit to it. That's where, you know, I think they can get burned a little bit. There was a little bit of that in this game, but most of it was just straight up losses. Most of what occurred was straight up losses. It wasn't a case of, you know, bulled by the stunting 96 kind of thing in our notes. It was 96 ragdolls, you know, 72. And it's, you know, he basically got his hand on him in a case where 72 is a little bit over his feet on one of the pressure events. And that, you know, that could get really ugly really quickly in a one-on-one loss. I would not say, generally speaking, it was so-and-so didn't pick up the stunt. So-and-so failed the stunt, the handoff on the stunt exchange, rather.
So let me ask it another way, because I understand what you're saying here. Did you see the Ravens be more successful in a certain type of like run call or a certain type of play that it feels like they were being too diverse or not calling enough of that? Like, are they playing to their, like, you know, is Voorhees really good on like zone block schemes, and are they not really running any zone block schemes? The Ravens look great on pitches against Buffalo, and they looked better on pitches, it felt like, in this game than they did, you know, non-pitches. But again, I wasn't watching it close enough retrospectively to have a take.
Okay. So there were a couple of plays during the game, and how it'll come up, how it invariably comes up when we're scoring the thing, is Maureen will ask me, did he pull on that play? And what she's usually seeing is one player moving up a level, oftentimes Linderbaum, to try and get to level two, and somebody like Fa'alele being given a relatively easy assignment to go behind Linderbaum to hit that defensive tackle on that side of the field, even if the run is going right. Meaning it could be a zone blocking play. Normally you might see everybody flowing to the right, but they give it an easy play to Fa'alele of that type. I would say, you know, what they've done with that has been very effective at getting the guys on the edge to make a quality block on such plays. But I didn't see, honestly, they just had so little success running the football on Sunday. And it's not like they ever do a whole lot of that. Like if you think the 87-yard run by Henry last year against Buffalo in week four, that was one of these plays that had all, you know, people going in opposite directions and had a lot of this, you know, interwoven kind of non-normal zone blocking stuff. In this game, the very first play of the game, the very first run play of the game, I believe, had something like this. But I would not. Yeah, it was the second. Sorry, I think it was the first play of the game. But let me look at it. Yeah, it was just a 1-yard run. They had a couple guys pull on the play. Might have been the second play also had it, but I'm not looking at it right now. So I feel like somebody else will go back there who's used to seeing how a run play is normally run and would say, that's not how that normally goes. You know, that normally this would either be zoning in one direction or you'd have a duo scheme lined up and they'd be, you know, have very set responsibilities in terms of climbing to level two. They just didn't have as much of that and they didn't have enough run success to diagnose, okay, there's the, you know, the 20 and the 23 and the 39 and the 46. Let's look at those plays and see how those worked out that you've got something going. Their best run of the day was eight yards, right? Other than Lamar. And they had a couple sixes in addition to that. I mean, it's just not enough. I mean, it's not enough to say, oh boy, that was working.
So where is the exit ramp here? Or when do Ravens fans need to start to get worried about Voorhees?
Yeah, this is the million-dollar question. I thought there was a question in here about with film study mailbag that I wanted to get to.
We can punt it to them.
Yeah, we could. Okay, here it is. Zach Serpa Weinberg said, how long is your runway for Voorhees before you look at making a change? Would you give him until the Chiefs, Texans, Rams sequence, which carries a lot of interior pass rush juice? Not many get right opportunities. It's a great point, Zach. And how I would expect this to roll out. I expect there to be some additional grace period for Voorhees beyond these two games. I don't think this is long enough. I think that Cleveland is exceptionally talented and Voorhees did enough in the preseason and earned the starting job that I don't think they're moving on to Ben Cleveland right now. Now, could it be one more game, two more games? Possibly. What I would say is it will be a gradual step. And they did it with Trenton Simpson on the other side of the ball. And they've done it with plenty of other players like McCary and Voorhees last year, where they basically had shared playing time. Actually, it's Rosengarten and McCary last year, where they had shared playing time for a while. And then they moved to one. I could see that happening as early as about week five, that they have two games in a row where they're alternate series with Cleveland and Voorhees. And if Voorhees doesn't, you know, get his ass kicked into gear from that, then they might make the change. I don't see this as being happening right away. I mean, this is, they've got a big payoff here potentially from Voorhees working out that I think they really want to try and harvest. I don't think waiting is going to help on it a lot. He's a second year player because of the redshirt year who will still be with the Ravens for 3 years. Cleveland is a free agent at the end of the year. And I know we got to win now, I tell you, and get your torches and pitchforks ready. But the truth of the matter is, I'm not sure there's a much greater chance with Cleveland than there is with Voorhees. So it's a matter of you know, having, you know, still having some dry powder and some ability to make that change. What would really make the situation better is anyone, either of two things. One is if they kept Dellinger as a 10th offensive lineman, I'd feel a lot better about their IOL depth. And number two is if they had any real hope that Emory Jones Jr. was going to be coming back at some point this year. Now, they've been very quiet about it. Maybe he will be back at some point. Maybe that's the reason Dellinger left, but I don't see it obviously on the horizon. He hasn't started practicing yet. So whenever he does,
he's not allowed to start practicing yet.
Okay. Whenever he does start practicing, it'll be his first practice with the Baltimore Ravens. So as a rookie, I'm not expecting him to have a zero run. He's not a vertical takeoff aircraft. He needs runway.
And to add to that, Ben Cleveland, probably the most surprising thing that happened this offseason was Ben Cleveland coming back to the Ravens. Yeah. I mean, again, it's kind of like if Trenton Simpson's last year was this year, I just like couldn't imagine him coming back to the Ravens next year, right? Like even if he played well, like even if it was kind of like yesterday's game where he had limited snaps, played well all the time, the Ravens are like, no, we're going to give you a role. I'd be out the door and I'd wave bye-bye. And I'm kind of surprised that we've never, like, I'm kind of surprised Ben Cleveland came back. And I think that the Ravens aren't in the kind of position, they don't feel strongly about Ben Cleveland. He's not like the next guy up. Like, we're ready to put him in right away. They've never acted or treated him like that as a player. I don't know why that would change at this point. So I think that also gives Voorhees a little bit more runway than we might expect.
Right. I mean, I basically agree with that. I think Voorhees this is his time to shine. And 2026 would have been the year for Dellinger, and it probably will be the year for Jones. And it doesn't necessarily mean Jones is going to be shut down for the year, but with every week that passes, the Ravens are further incented to do so. They gain an extra year. Yeah, with the NFI status, exactly. They gain an extra year of team control by having him out the whole year, and they can make a financial agreement with him to make him whole on the thing that he won't be upset. But you know, frankly, the Ravens, you know, if he were able to come back in week 10 and say, yeah, I really want to play, coach, I want to, you know, want to help this team down the stretch, they would have to have a need so great to for that to be something they would even entertain, that I think that it's very unlikely. I think, you know, if we got to week 10, he's not coming back.
The one other thing I throw out here, Ken, is the Ravens will, from time to time, make upgrades by trade. And the only place that it seems like they would really need to do that at this point would be offensive line. That everywhere else feels relatively set, relatively deep, unless it's some kind of knock on wood injury were never to occur over the next few weeks before the trade deadline. And it won't, because we don't want that to happen. You know, outstanding of that, this is the one place where, one, it's not just needing a player. It's two, that the depth is like not as comfortable it is at a lot of other positions.
Right. I would call it more of a 2026 problem, but it's a 25 problem as well, because they don't have Dellinger. And if the 26 issue is staring them right in the face, is they might not have Linderbaum. And they really need to make sure that Corey Bullock or Dellinger, who isn't here anymore, or somebody else to be named later, who's maybe a second round draft pick this time instead of a one, is going to be able to replace Linderbaum next year. And that's a big question.
That's let's go back to you and I have not talked about Dellinger at all up until this point, but what the heck happened there? Like, I mean, your perspective is just real quick, like Linderbaum, there's a chance that he's not on this team next year that is more than 50% right now. Like, he could come back and they could make it work. And like, but Lamar's got to sign first there. Like, Linderbaum is only back under a certain set of circumstances that have to happen in a specific sequence. Right. And Lamar is one of those dominoes to fall. And he seems not super keen on getting anything done during the season. Right. Which makes me think Linderbaum is gone. Like, is Dellinger's agent and are like, were they not hip to that? Like, what happened there?
Okay. So a few things. Warhop got at the podium during OTAs, not even before camp even began, OTAs, and said, answered, it was actually my question. He said, you know, the two guys we're going to have a chance at center are Dellinger and Reed Holsky. Now, Reed Holsky's, you know, 13th or 14th man on the offensive line. Ozzie Hutchinson was below him. Not too many other people were. So it was a little surprising, but he actually did play during the preseason. We never saw Dellinger get a chance at center. And so that was the question, was specifically about what happens if Linderbaum leaves after 25, who are you looking at? And then he actually took it further. And he said, the two guys we're going to look at in camp and preseason are, you know, Dellinger and Holsky. Dellinger played only guard. And I'm not saying that's terrible or anything, but the Ravens do have a couple of backup guards and, you know, Bullock might be in that group. Dalcourt, I thought, was a very reasonable option. Jared Penning, I don't think there's any reason at all why I'd have him on the team. And he's not on the team, he's on the practice squad, but I don't see any reason to have him on the practice squad over either of the D's, Dellinger or Dalcourt. They've got Samak. I don't see a future for Samak, but they can talk themselves into it if they want, but they already have basically said that Samak is behind Bullock on the center depth chart. And Samak is a smaller guy. He's never going to be able to play guard, I don't think, in the way the Ravens want to have a bigger, more physical guard. So to me, he's not in the future plans. So we're down to...
It's so bizarre to me that somebody would go... I mean, and I get it, right? Like, you want to get your opportunity to play. But if you're on a practice squad, you're not the next guy up to be a starter, right? Like, you're not going to be making your way onto the field. How do you leave the Ravens and go to the Browns? Like, you really got to be upset to me to take that opportunity, because you can go from the practice squad anywhere to any active roster.
But he that's right. But he may not have liked the situation in Baltimore, or he may have really liked it in Cleveland. And the reason he might really like it in Cleveland is that is a very old offensive line that is basically all going to retire together if they don't drop dead first in about the next year. And so Posick and Teller and Bitonio are basically all done, and they're at the end. They're at the end or near the end of their contracts, and the Browns don't really want to invest a bunch of money. They have to play some money ball at those positions, and they might have convinced Dellinger, hey, we got an opportunity for you here. Or Dellinger might have not liked something about the coaches, Harbaugh, the promises that were made to him about playing center, not getting that. I mean, I could come up with a lot of reasons why it would be. But for some reason, he was unhappy with the situation in Baltimore relative to what he had in Cleveland, because he was a free agent. Let it be known, Ravens offered him a practice squad spot, and he turned him down. So
I feel like the only time I remember something rising Ben to Mason. Like that kind of level. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yep. Exactly. And it was, there was like a huff about it, right? Like it was like in Baltimore, right? Like not outside of Baltimore, but inside of Baltimore, it was a news story. Like I said, you and I hadn't chatted about Dellinger and what happened with that, but that did surprise me. And like, you know, even if you look at who the Ravens have down the depth chart, it's just, you know, like you were just saying, there's nothing guaranteed. I am worried. The reason why I bring up the notion of a trade is that if Noteboom and Cleveland both, for whatever reason, have to make their way onto the field together, the Ravens need to add something else to the mix that is not currently on this team.
Yeah, they need a quality veteran guard, you're saying, and I agree.
So I'll be interested to see if Voorhees continues to falter here, you know. And I think that the Lions are not as good in their we're not going to see as tough of a road with the Lions in terms of Voorhees, but I mean, we talked a little bit about Linderbaum. I mean, what did you see from Linderbaum? And is there something the Ravens can be doing more with Linderbaum to help Voorhees more if Falele is playing better?
Complex question. Let me say one more thing about Dellinger. Dellinger is currently available to any team, including the Ravens. If they wanted to add him as the 10th offensive lineman, it would be kind of a tell that Emory Jones Jr. is not coming back this year. But it would be a move the Ravens could make. All they have to do is sign him, keep him for 3 weeks, and send Ali shopping to the practice squad, and they got it. They've really got only one guy they could send down because of it. But it just didn't make any sense to not have a 10th offensive lineman. And then all of a sudden, Dellinger's back in your plans. He's on the active roster, and he's here for 4 years. So I still think that move is open. It won't be open forever because offensive line depth will attrit, and Dellinger is one of probably 20 guys that are towards the top of the practice squad in terms of the quality of players available across the league. And he'll be taken by somebody before too long as attrition occurs. So window is closing. All right. You asked about Linderbaum.
Yeah. So I asked about Linderbaum's performance and whether or not there's a way to connect Voorhees and Linderbaum together better to improve both their performances.
Yeah. That's the second part is a very tricky question. So let me get to the first question. It's about his performance first. And he did not play well in this game, 50 blocks, 50 plays, 40 blocks. He missed five. And then he had five negative events, half of penetration. So he shared one of those. He was parts of four different pressures, one full and three other halves. He just had a lot of trouble with the size the Browns presented inside. And this is an age-old Linderbaum problem. You saw PFF had it's funny the PFF score because he's got like a 26 pass blocking score and about a 70 or something run blocking score. Might have been a little higher. And then his overall score is barely lower than that run blocking score, which basically tells you exactly what you need to know about the weights for PFF uses for run and pass blocking. Namely, don't use them. You can look at the scores separately. Look at run blocking, look at pass blocking, and they're probably just perfectly fine. But don't use their combined number. It's a train wreck. Bad, really bad game for Linderbaum, and 34 points, 0.68, came in at a D-, the absolute bottom point of a passing grade, which is the third Ravens lineman in two games, 3 out of 10. Scores to accomplish that feat, both guards last game. So tough game for him. He did have five blocks in level two. There's really nothing to point to in this performance. It was good. It was basically him getting overwhelmed by bigger men on the interior.
So is there, going back to my question then, is there a way to, I should have just waited for my question, but I'm an impatient person. This is why I
pitch for it.
Is there a way, if Voorhees is struggling, to connect them together to help both of them? And I understand the complexity of that question relies somewhat on if Marshall Yanda is your right guard, it's a lot easier to do that kind of thing.
He's already kind of the tent pole for the interior as it is, kind of holding up a couple of sagging points with Boris. And if you want to believe the problems with Falele, we want to talk about him in a second, but, to me, that's a very complex question. If it goes back to what we talked about in the first show, is the dichotomy between putting the handcuffs on the defense and putting the handcuffs on the offense and the result. This would put additional handcuffs on the offense in terms of how they run their defense. outrun their offense rather. And that's it's just not something I think the Ravens want to do. They want to run the offense as they want to run it and let Lamar bail them out of bad personnel matchups along the offensive line. I think that's the Ravens' way. The whole notion that Falele can't zone block, whether it's true or not, and it's probably there's a certain amount of truth to it, is that he's not ideal for the scheme because he's a very big guy who does not move well. But on the other hand, the Ravens certainly have not suffered in terms of their run game in 2024, at least, for having Falele at right guard. So I think the Ravens' way is basically to let Lamar figure out the problem when they have some interior line mismatches.
Yeah. Well, I mean, let's talk about Falele. You know, you've praised him to some degree. What did you see from him?
Yeah. So real bad first game, and it was disappointing because of what had happened the year before. D-minus game. He was at the very bottom of a passing grade. This game was much better. So he had 50.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, and Emory Education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Super Sale and get 40% off paints and stains September 19th through the 24th. With prices starting at $29.39, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
He plays 43 blocks. He missed six, and five of those were losses at the line of scrimmage. So that's not good, but they weren't scoring losses or negative scoring losses at the line of scrimmage, which is good. He did give up a third of a quarterback hit, 42 points, and that worked out to be 0.84. You can see he had extremely good mobility numbers and highlight numbers. He made three out of three pulls. Nobody else. I mean, the whole rest of the team only had made two out of two pulls. So that was a start. He made four blocks in level two, and that was something like four out of five because he missed one block in level two, I believe. But that's really good for him to be on the move and block like that. He had three different highlight blocks in the game. You can look at my offensive line article if you want more detail on that. But a 0.89 works out to a B+. Here's what's funny about the Falele situation. Played 309 snaps. A lot of people can probably have this on their bingo card already for things Ken has said multiple times on the show. But 309 snaps last year in the last five games, he averaged 0.89 after adjustment, which is right on the B+, A- border. This game exactly fits in with those five from last year, this one from this year in week two, with the outlier being the Buffalo thing. So if we were looking at data somehow, we were throwing out two outliers, we threw out something that was slightly over 90, and we throw out this Buffalo game, and all of a sudden Falele looked like a 0.89 again, who is right on that B+, A- border. That's the game that doesn't fit in is Buffalo. Now, that is a very big positive development for the Ravens. And, you know, I hope fans will temper their desire to be correct in their hatred of Falele with their hope that Falele will actually become good, because the Ravens really need that this year. And the truth of the matter is, this game gave me more hope again that Falele could return to at least a level that is between everybody's, you know, he's a D-minus player, a D player, and what he was at the end of the last year. If he's a C right guard, that's fine. That's fine. I think he can be better than that, but a C would be fine. And anyway, good game for Falele, and definitely a positive step forward.
Well, and even if the Buffalo game was a bad game, that wasn't really the problem in the game.
Right.
Overall, right? And obviously, no, nothing was a problem in this game when you look at the final score, and we need to be happier. You already told me, yada, yada, yada. but, you know, ultimately, if the Ravens would have lost this game, it would have been clear, not just from your scores, but I think from anybody that was watching, that it would have been the main attributable area to put that on would have been the offensive line and the center to left side of the offensive line. They were the weakest link, you know, overall in terms of the performance that we saw from this week. I don't think that even if in Falele's game, and he did have a not great game against Buffalo, and there were a couple of plays that he really missed, but even outside of that, those were not the end all be all game breakers. They weren't even part of the sum of the Murphy's Law of things that went wrong that added into the reasons why the Ravens ultimately lost that game.
Yeah, I agree. You know, they were a 2 or 3 point, maybe a 3 point consideration on a 10 point scale, where, you know, Henry fumbling is a 9 and
loop.
It's hard to imagine what a 10 is. Yeah.
Right. The tip, you know, the tip in the end zone, the fourth down,
probably an 8 or 9 also.
Yeah. And the missed kick was an 8 or 9. They're right up. I mean, those three things in conjunction with each other are just so darn unlucky in one game. Anyway, we're happy. The Ravens won by a lot this week. Yeah. So, you know, I do think it'll be interesting to see how most fans end up leaning into what they think about Falele. At the end of the day, I'm with you. I don't care who the players are that are performing well. Let them be the guys that I don't even like in the first place. Let it be Ben Cleveland. Like, come in and play well and do your jobs, and it's going to be good for this team overall. So.
Yeah, I could never be happier than when a player I don't like or I didn't like being drafted actually works out. Patrick Queen, when he was playing well, fantastic. Finally, we're getting some return on Patrick Queen. You know, he's playing next to Roquan. We don't know what the reason is. Patrick Queen's a Steeler. I hate him again. Okay. But Patrick Queen, the night he was drafted, it wasn't a matter of I hated him. My reaction to it is a matter of public record. Go out there, listen to the podcast. The live stream is still out there available to be listened to. And I wanted Xavier McKinney, and the Ravens drafted Queen. And I was visibly upset about it. And they're all these questions are coming to us. Is Ken all right? You know, does Ken need a hug? The truth of the matter is, I'm just very upset about the draft pick. Let me feel, damn it. And then Patrick Queen ended up being really bad for 2 years for the Ravens before Roquan showed up. And then he ended up being a good player, and he helped the Ravens, and that was a good thing. And he got overpaid by the Steelers, and that was a good thing. And that Ravens didn't.
A fun aside for you. I have someone that I do some work with that's a big Steelers fan. We're close friends. Somehow, I don't know how we do it. And we were talking today, and he was just kind of lamenting how the Steelers don't have, like, the same guys that they used to have, like Ferrier and Ward, that weren't like the all pros, but like made plays when they needed to. And he's like, Patrick Queen is always this close to making the play, but he never freaking makes it. And I just started laughing. Yep. I thought of you, Ken.
he's the worst tackler you can ever meet. And the great thing about the Steelers last year, the thing that held together their defense, was they got a fantastic year out of Deshaun Elliott as Queen's caddy tackler. Deshaun Elliott made, like, it's some enormous number of tackles with like one miss, I think, the whole year. Maybe it was two, but it was,
I remember.
Yeah, it was a huge number. And a lot of that had to be making up for Queen up the middle. And then we'd get to see firsthand Queen get bulldozed in that playoff game and, you know, picked on by Belichick on Derrick Henry highlights. You know, this is basically, I don't know what Patrick Queen's doing on that play, but, you know.
Well, other guys that you didn't love at the inception of the draft, Ryan Rosengarten. Roger. Yeah, I was like, it's not Ryan. I liked the pick at the moment. We were streaming together in that moment. I thought it was great value for them to get a tackle. The guy that you wanted in Kansas City does not look like a professional level football player. You know, so like, you never know how this stuff is going to work out. But what do you see from Rosengarten this week?
Yeah, and that's, by the way, Rosengarten's a good example of, you can't be married to your original opinion about the guy. You can't do it. And you know, when it starts to not work out, say it. There's a guy at my barber who always wants to talk to me when I'm there. And he always tries to tell me that Lamar Jackson is never going to take him to the Super Bowl. He sucks. Look, at some point, maybe after two MVPs, maybe it's going to take three, you know, and I asked him this question. He's like, what's going to change your mind about Lamar Jackson? And he says, I guess when they win the Super Bowl. I bet it won't. change his mind about my even when they do win a Super Bowl. The guys
are, I agree. I know people like that. I agree. Yeah. I agree.
Anyway, Roger Rosengarten, obviously coming to this year, one of the players that the Ravens are really hoping can get it done. And this was a good bounce back game for him. Made 45 out of 50 blocks, missed three, did allow half a penetration, did allow a third of a sack. A lot of the things that have gone wrong with Rosengarten this year have actually been run blocking plays. So he had two of those where he got beat. One very key one on the Henry fumble in the first game. But he's been a pretty darn good pass blocker. And this game, he scored 0.89, which at tackle is an A. So he was the highest graded of the Ravens. And I think I'm going to keep it that short. If you want more detail, go out to the offensive line article. We spent a lot of time on this because it actually is an important hole in the Ravens, but we probably want to talk about some skill position players too.
You know, it's a little bit more Madden-ish. It's more fun to talk about the skill position players.
Jordan, you're the guest. Who do you want to talk about first?
Let's talk about Zay Flowers, because we talked about him on our preseason prediction show, and we talked about what a good season for Zay Flowers would look like. And man, is he going to blow whatever expectations that we set out of the water. I mean, I set my great season at like a slight tide rise of like one, you know, 1 footer, you know, whatever, however you want to apply that analogy of being a little bit better than he was last year. I mean, he's on pace for a monster year. Obviously, I don't think we'll stay at this pace, but who knows? He very clearly looks like Lamar's favorite target. He is getting open. So far, it feels like he's a little more consistent with his hands. I feel like the one thing with Zay, and I think my knock on him during that preseason was that it feels like he has one drop a game-ish where you just feel like he should have made those catches. I feel like we haven't seen that so far this year. That trust, taking that away helps Lamar trust him more as well. Right. It just seems like it seems like he's the guy. I love it that he's the guy. You can use him like an X in that situation without using him like an X. You know, like, it doesn't have to be a jump ball inside slant, throw it in a contested catch situation. It can be a Zay is going to run this kind of route and get open, one read, throw it to him, and he's going to be there, and Lamar's going to trust it. And I feel like we might be on the cusp of something like that this year.
Well, you got the perfect guy there for Lamar wants to see the route break open, because nobody gets separation at the top of the stem like Zay Flowers. And Bateman is the best route runner by far on the team. He knows how to put wiggle on the opponent and force him to see. I don't think Flowers really does that. He did have a good comeback route though last week, but I'll say the big thing that Flowers does is at his weight and at his size, he's able to just stick his foot, not sink his hips, not give away the break, and run a six, for example, back to the middle of the field and give a lot of trouble to that trailing defender. He's a truly exceptional breakaway artist at the top of the stem. And if you know, there will be times, and I don't think they've done this enough with Zay Flowers, where when they start to sit on that six more, that he's going to have to show them the eight and the nine, all those, the corner post and go. And he's going to have to run some more verticals to take advantage of them. I really want to see a situation where the defense is completely focused on Zay Flowers, the way that everybody knows Keaton, well, but they can't be, because everybody knows Keaton Mitchell's going to get the ball.
Right. We're on pace for 170 targets, 119 catches, 1800 plus yards, like 8.5 touchdowns, right? Like, yeah, I mean, stellar numbers in that perspective. But I think we saw some of those outbreaking corner routes in this Cleveland game. Lamar just overthrew them a little bit. He had the separation. The throws weren't there. I think we'll see those things that you want from him. I mean, health, all these guys, it's all stay healthy until we get to the playoffs. Don't get hurt in week 18. Those kind of things, you know, in these formulas. But Zay is going to, I think he's going to be really good. And the Ravens are just going to have to figure out how they're going to pay all these guys. Like, it's just.
Flowers will be a big question, but Flowers will be a Raven for two more years after this with the
option.
5th-year option. So I'm not too concerned about it from that sense. And he's the kind of player that might be worth a franchise tag at wide receiver, though. It's such a big number during a Lamar high number contract year. I don't think they're going to be able to afford that, which means they probably have to go back to the draft, and they might even have to consider trading him before year 5. So enjoy Zay Flowers while we have him. He's here for this year. I'm sure he'll be here for next year. I'm not as 100% sure that he'll be here the year after that. And the Ravens could potentially make a big move to, to trade him. But I did, I agree on that. We saw the seven on the very first, I think it was the first throw to him, might have been the second, where he was on the left side of the field. Lamar actually was under pressure on that throw, or I think it would have been on the money. Lamar had a good day of putting the ball in the bucket, most notably on the seven to Walker in the end zone.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was unfortunate. All right. Let me pick one here. I guess we'll talk about Hopkins here for a second. It's not that I'm down on Hopkins in any way. He's done 185% of what we could have hoped for him, even though he's only had four targets in two games, in terms of the results. And he's such a much better value than OBJ. It's not even funny. He's the kind of older receiver that I'm okay trying to get. In a lot of ways, the acquisition resembles Bolden, although it's a couple of years later in their careers, maybe three. But he's a guy who definitely has the hands and has the ability to work through a receiver. And one of the plays I really liked in this game was drawing that pass interference play. It wasn't easy, but he almost pulled the guy on top of him, pulled the guy through him. OBJ did some of that when he was here. And OBJ also, to his credit, you know, had a decent year production-wise on a per-target basis. It's just they overpaid him by so much, I think largely because Lamar told him, go get him or else.
Yeah. No, I mean, the thing about what's interesting about Hopkins is that he's not going to beat guys on go routes. He's not going to beat guys on those deep routes. Those are going to have to be contested throws and catches. And like that, we're just going to have to live with that. We haven't seen much beyond that. And whether or not there still is some craftiness to his actual like breaks and route running at kind of like a broader level. What I love is that Lamar seems to trust him in those situations.
Oh, yeah.
And Lamar doesn't trust anybody. Lamar doesn't trust an agent, right? Like Lamar doesn't, like, that's just like not his vibe, right? And that's okay, right? But like Lamar very rarely likes to throw those contested catches to guys. Andrews would be the only guy that it felt like he would throw to before that wasn't kind of like in those big open windows at times. I love that Hopkins is part of that. I want to see that in different levels of the field too. I don't want it to be in some of those go route situations. And I talked a little bit about the X concept for Flowers. If Hopkins can evolve to that, even if it just needs to be like, I mean, think of the seam touchdown to Bolden in the Super Bowl, even if it's a play like that, but it has to happen when it can, that is going to be a big thing in a big moment. And we're building towards that value now. And I love that.
Hopkins has all kinds of opportunities to help this offense on just a pure fresh legs basis. Guy can come in and replace Bateman at the X for a play or two. He can pay a big slot if you need him to. He can make a catch over the middle of the field. The trust angle is a great one. That before the big third and nine play or whatever it was at Buffalo, Lamar ran over to Hopkins and whispered something in his ear. I mean, he's clearly getting the ball after he does something like that, or it's the greatest, you know, fakery you've ever seen. And then he ran the route a little short of the sticks, but Lamar definitely trusted him to be the guy who would catch the ball and at least get him close. And then they passed up the fourth and two and a half. And that makes a lot of mathematicians angry. It's another can of worms, but I'm with you that Hopkins hit off the team. I just think expectations need to be managed. He won't have the kind of per snap productivity he's had on contested catches through two games. You know, if he's a guy who, if the Ravens can get 25 yards a game out of, it's probably a good thing. That's 425 yards for the year. I think that would be very good for Hopkins. If they get 30 yards per game, it'd be fantastic. And anything more, gravy on gravy, you know, kind of thing.
Yep. Totally agree. Well, I mean, I'll pick Bateman next. I mean, one, he had some targets in this game. They weren't completed. It did feel like he and Lamar weren't necessarily seeing the same things. That does concern me to some level of degree. I mean, are we going to have – Bateman was really good last year. Bateman was very good in 2024 for this Ravens offense. Are you worried about him at all?
I am not. I mean, this was a game where the pressure was too much. In the first game, Lamar only had three ATS throws. Yeah. The place where Bateman has really helped the Ravens the last couple of years, in particular in 24, has been as an extended play receiver. He can slip free and make plays there. It's the more of them, the merrier for all Ravens fans. And to see Tez Walker, you know, deliver on a play like that, that he's the last guy you'd expect to deliver on a play like that. To see Hopkins pull a ball, you know, snatch a ball away that he has no business catching on a play like that, where Lamar runs around and then finally gets his longest throw of the day in terms of time to throw, is a good thing. But the more the merrier. The big problem for me is they just have not had the tight end play this year, and they need that back. They need him back as blockers, and they need him back as receivers.
And I'm just going to cheat. I think Tez Walker is more deserving of credit than you're giving him. He is on the first touchdown that he caught, that he had, if he would have been, that play would have gone half a second longer, he would have been 5 yards ahead of that defender. He is clearly the fastest Ravens receiver. If he can get into a break, even if he's covered in the break, he's going to beat that guy out of any break without any help. And the Ravens don't have another guy. Like, Bateman doesn't have that kind of top end speed.
It's Flowers.
Yeah.
Flowers is the guy who's better out of the break. But top speed is, he's clearly the, if you 100 yard dash, he wins every time on among the current Ravens. He's got the most sprinter-esque body. He also has to sink his hips and show it to that defensive back, which has been his problem. He hasn't developed the complementary comeback routes yet that will make him a real force in this league with 7, 8, 9, which he was great at in college.
I'll take Jacoby Jones, right? Like, we will, like, you know, if we want to use the analogy of Bolden and like Ravens former Super Bowl, I will take a Jacoby Jones and an Anquan Bolden on top of everything else. The kind of like what you were saying, we'll take all of it, right? Like, we would take, if they could have, they're going to need someone like Walker to have a big deep catch at some point over the top. They're going to need Hopkins to have one big contested catch at some point where Lamar really trusts him. And I like seeing these guys get those opportunities at this stage.
Yeah. And honestly, they delivered him in this game, and they were a portion of the margin of victory. I mean, it's not like, yeah, that wasn't the one play that we keep talking about for an entire offseason as it might have gone wrong. We're typically going to talk about the play that went wrong, unless we're talking about the Mile High Miracle in a year where the Ravens win the Super Bowl, talk about the play that went right. But there aren't that many of those to go around, you know, particularly on a Ravens team that doesn't, they win a lot of blowout games. They don't have as many one score games available to them to win. We're going to have fewer plays like that to point to. All right. I think that does it for me. We could talk about Wallace, who I thought had a very good balanced game across the board. He blocked well, had a really nice chip block, and then caught the first down for I think it was the first pass of the game on third down. And then he caught the touchdown on what was a really nice corner route where he was getting away from the defensive back, created space for Lamar in that corner of the end zone. What else did he do? Fell on the fumble from Derrick Henry. And, you know, he's out there on special teams, of course, doing his job there too, like he always does. So, hell of a player, really valuable to the Ravens, and can't be understated what his impact is.
Yeah, let's just talk about Justice Hill too real quick. Are you worried about him at all? I feel like we have not, you know, he hasn't gotten a ton of opportunities, but he's never gotten a ton of opportunities, and he's not looked particularly great this year.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree. I can't point to it and say he's lost speed, because I don't think we've really seen that. In a Browns game where the formations are really tight and they're rushing a lot of really big guys, that's not a good Justice Hill game. Hill is a pass blocker against that, is not going to look very good. And as a receiver, he's got to be a guy you float out. And I don't even know if he had a target in this game. They have one for a few yards or something. There wasn't much, whatever he had. Just go to this really quickly.
Yeah, well, three targets for three catches
for 18 yards. So not what you want.
18 yards.
Nope. Did have an 8 yard play. That's something. At least that, you know, he's still in Lamar's mind, which I think is important. But you know, it was nothing like what he did to Buffalo last year and ruined their week 4.
Yep.
Yeah. All right. I think we got one more mailbag question. Unless there's another player you want to talk about, I'll get that ready while you,
I mean, just real quickly, we haven't talked about it, but Derrick Henry's fumble concerns are on my radar now, a thing that was on my radar before. And they are now firmly on my radar. This one was a particularly good punch out. But the problem is for me, once you become labeled as the guy that can have the ball punched out, you're like, it leads to more balls getting punched out because guys are
more
trying.
Shots on goals. Yeah. More exactly. Shots on goal. Yeah. no doubt about it. I'm concerned about it too, you know, particularly after last year went so well avoiding fumbles. But the Ravens don't really have another solution. So you can say it's on your radar, but it's kind of like saying, yeah, the Ravens might have a left tackle problem after watching this game from Ronnie Stanley. There's nothing to be done about it. There's no left tackle to be acquired. Our only strategy is hope. You know, and we used to say at work, hope is not a strategy, but our only strategy is hope in this particular case.
Yeah, no, I think that's right.
All right. So the one additional mailbag question coming. This is kind of an interesting one. And I'd like to hear your answer on this too. Adam Costanzo said, Ken, would you rather have a lineman that plays at a C-minus to C-plus level all year or someone that ranges from a high F, not fall off the table, I mean, that's the exact lingo, and an A-minus, and you never know what you're getting on a week-to-week basis. But you have more variability with that player. And I've got my answer in terms of what I would want, but I'd like to hear yours.
Yeah, my answer is I want the variability. I want 8 to 9 elite games that I can trust in a player, because I know that Lamar is one going to cure the ills of at least half of the bad games and probably take advantage of all of the great games on top of that. Right now, that same analysis applies that if you go to the C's and he's going to do well enough, but like, I want to see elite games from players. I think that at the end of the day is the one that makes a difference. If I'm in a playoff situation, I'm definitely taking the chance where I want the opportunity for a guy to give me that A level performance, because I think it's all the difference in the world for Lamar.
Well, first of all, really appreciate the question, Adam, and I appreciate your response there, Jordan. And I definitely take a different side here. I always, as an actuary, I always want to get paid for risk. Anytime that there's a variable outcome, it's a basic rule of markets. Everybody's a rational mean variance analyzer. You need to get paid for risk. So if somebody is going to be a C every game, I'll take that every day of the week in terms of knowing what I get out of a player. And if you're talking about a young player doing it, I think you could project improvement onto that. So more consistency generally is good. And I'd certainly take a guy who plays a C every week as opposed to a guy who gives you an even number of A, B, C, D, F within, you know, that work out to be the same average play in general. I like your point you make about Lamar being able to take advantage of the A's to a greater degree and not be impacted by the F's. That might actually be true. I can't really say
Let me give an example. So like, let's use the upcoming Green Bay game. And let's say Ronnie Stanley is the player that we're talking about. And Ronnie Stanley just has a stone cold A game. If you told me that that was the outcome of that game, that Parsons was mostly blitzing coming from the left side, Stanley stopped him up, I would be surprised if we didn't win that game. Now, if you told me that Ronnie Stanley was having a C-level game in that, I think that that's just par for the course and we'll see what happens. But if Lamar knows that if we have a guy that is just like being taken out, and we've got, I think Monken is a great play caller and is seeing that happen during the game, they're going to take advantage of it. And Lamar is just, and this Ravens offense is just too good for even the best defenses. I think that could be a thing that puts it over the top.
Okay. I don't think you're considering the range of outcomes the way that Adam was proposing it. So he's saying, yeah, you can either have a C every week, or you can have an A or an A and an F on alternate weeks, or an A, B, C, D, F every 5 weeks drawn randomly kind of thing.
I only took two of the three variables. I didn't talk about what would happen in this.
You only took the midpoint and the high end, and you'll polish up that pitchfork when the bad thing happens. But if we've gone into this game and said literally, you could have a C from Ronnie Stanley, or you can have an A or an F out from Ronnie Stanley against Myles Garrett, you'd have taken the C for sure. I would have anyway. Absolutely for sure. I don't want an A or an F. I don't want variability in an opponent I should beat. And that's every other team in the National Football League is a team the Baltimore Ravens should beat.
Sure. Okay. No, I mean, I certainly see both sides of this, right? Like, I just think that football is – you've already talked about this. We already see inconsistency on the offensive line and all across the board on any given week. at any given time, right? And so if you can tell me that you're going to have players that are going to give you A-level performances, even if it's from time to time, and even if it comes with some downside, like those A-level performances, especially in big moments and big games, they're the difference, you know, okay, just randomly. And I would be willing to take that chance, but I think you're way more conservative of a gambler than I am too.
Well, it's, you know, part of that comes from, you know, expecting to have an edge when gambling, and you know, if it doesn't meet my standard, then I won't play is my thought about gambling. But, and that goes for all risk decisions in life, not just actually at the tables. But I we did say earlier in the first show, talked about value of risk generally accrues to the defense. Variable results accrue to the defense. I think I might agree with the point you're making if you're talking about a defensive player. If you're talking about a defensive player and you might have an A, B, C, D, F game and you're going to throw in some, I think, you know, there might be some playmaking value you get out of guys who you just take a chance on them being Marcus Williams. And sometimes they're going to be great and sometimes they're going to be terrible. That's not what I want on an offensive line. And it's probably not what I want out of any player when I'm expected to win the game. I wouldn't want to sign up for one particular player. All right. Always a pleasure talking football with you, Jordan. Pitchforks aside, always a pleasure.
Same. Trust me, it is better that it didn't work out, but we did not do the podcast, the defensive podcast after the Buffalo game.
Oh, boy. Anything. Yeah.
You think the Pitchforks are out now? I was steamed.
Okay. Well, I'm glad. And I know you have a regular sabbatical. You take to Las Vegas for the first week of the year, and that's always a lot of fun, I'm sure. And I didn't want to horn in on that anyway, but I appreciate you making time tonight to do this on in what in fact was very short notice. Jordan, tell folks where they can contact you and talk football.
Yeah, check me out on Discord. My handle there is FlashJordanK, FlashJordan, so no A, K. And happy to chat with you there.
What's the point with leaving out letters?
I was young when I created my initial handle, and like, you got to stick with what you stick to, right?
All right. Fair enough. So somebody probably had already taken Flash Jordan with the entire.
I think that was the case. And instead of keeping the A and adding the K, I was like, let me take the A out and add the K, because I was like 8 and stupid.
Okay. All right, Jordan. Always a pleasure again. Other folks out there, thanks for listening. We always appreciate the loyalty. Like and subscribe. A 5-star, 50-word review means a lot to us if you don't mind taking 10 minutes to do that. Otherwise, we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.